Hey, welcome to the Toddcast. My name's Andrew Barth. I'm your host, and with me is my very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hey, Andy Barth. Thanks for having me on your program.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
What is this place we're in?
This is my office.
It's an office in a theater. There's a theater outside this office.
There is a giant theater outside this office.
It's really big.
It is, but yet my office is really small.
Yeah, you have a small office. It's cramped, and it's a little bit claustrophobic.
Well, the nice thing is,
we're right outside.
It's dark.
Yeah.
It's soundproof.
Yeah.
And it's smallish.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect for podcasting, I would say.
It's perfect for podcasting and killing hookers.
And killing. How many hookers have you killed in here?
Well, you know, killed?
Yeah.
Four or five.
Four or five.
I don't know. Who counts? They
was
don't
it,
count.
Were most of those accidental? Like a very
no,
bad thing?
No, very specific.
Oh, they were, it was
very
premeditated?
Yeah.
Hooker killing?
Yeah.
Huh.
They're dead inside anyways, it doesn't matter.
Did you have a business relationship with these hookers before you decided you needed to kill them? Or?
No. I just decided that they needed to go.
Okay. Well.
And I had a great space for it.
You do
so
have
really,
a great...
it's kind of a waste if I don't kill hookers.
Right.
Here.
No, I get it.
You know, that's
I get
a problem.
It. Super glad I'm not a hooker.
You're not?
Mm-mm.
Oh. Well, it changes things a little bit, but that's all right. We can roll with it. I'm good with that. Good with that. No, just put that away.
I appreciate your flexibility.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just brought my special bag for no reason, but I can just put that back in the trunk.
That's okay. Great. So what is your show normally about? Just killing hookers or?
No. I tend not to talk about the hookers too much.
Oh, okay.
Because they occasionally listen to it, and you know, you don't want to tip them off.
Yeah. I'll bet a lot of hookers listen to this podcast. So you run this theater we're in?
I run it from a technical side. Yes, I am kind of the technical director / operations director. So it's a very fun, exciting job.
It is.
And I'm not actually being sarcastic. It's actually kind of
you
fun,
like
exciting.
The job.
I do like the job.
There's a lot that happens here. How many shows? You're in the middle of a break or a season right now?
We actually start our season in September, but we start, because we're on a college campus, we start campus events at the top of the semester, which is right now. So
okay.
We're just starting. But over the summer, we do rentals, too. We do, you know, dance companies rent from us, and we had a BET film shoot in last week.
BET, what is that?
The Black Entertainment.
What is the?
I don't know if the
you got the B E, but television, Black Entertainment Television,
telemovies,
I don't think
Telemundo
specific. No, that's Spanish. I really don't know what it.
Okay.
But that makes sense. Sure. Black Entertainment Television,
right? I just recently found out what TMZ stands for.
It stands for 10 mile zone, right?
30 mile zone.
30 mile zone.
Yeah,
I knew it was a mile zone.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure of the.
You were wildly inaccurate in the actual area.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for, like, more tighter gossip. The 30 miles. Well, like, when you get out to 30 miles, it's like, who the... You're talking about Scott Baio.
What's happening in Simi Valley?
Yeah, who gives a shit?
Really.
Yeah.
No, that sucks.
Yeah, let's keep it to 10,
you guys. It's all Kardashians at that point. That's probably why they made it 30. Just have to get that little
loop out. Yeah, so they can get out to Calabasas. Fucking Kardashians.
God, Calabasas sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a terrible place.
I know people who avoid ever going to the farmer's market there because the Kardashians are often there.
Are they shooting there or do they just...
No, they just shop there. But people say, I used to go there because it's the best farmer's market in, you know, Los Angeles. But I don't go anymore because there's too many Kardashians. It's the paparazzi.
No, I get that. I'm just a little surprised because, look, really, honestly, Santa Monica is going to be a better farmer's market as farmer's markets go.
I don't know. I've never been to either.
I have been to the Santa Monica one, and it's very impressive.
I've been to the one in, I guess it's Tarzana, maybe?
Wow.
I don't know. And I've been to the one in Culver City, downtown Culver City.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And I went to the one in Studio City, which everyone said was really good, but I did not have a good time.
Why didn't you have a good time?
Because there's a lot of self-entitled showbiz assholes who go to that one.
Hmm.
And in fact, when I went, Colby, my son Colby, was very small. And they had one of them blow-up slides, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You go to the top and you slide down.
Yeah.
And he went to the top, you know, and he slid down. And then this other little girl, you're supposed to wait until the person clears the slide. But she slid right after him and slammed into him.
Ow.
And made him cry. And then Hillary, my wife, went up to the little girl and said, "Why did you do that? That wasn't okay, you know." And then her mom came up to Hillary and said, "You don't get to parent my child." And that's when I stepped in and I said, "Ha! You weren't watching the shop. Somebody has to watch the shop." And then she got in my face, and her giant husband came, and I was so livid. Her husband was like a foot taller than me, and came up and was like, "What's the problem here?" And I was so livid, it didn't even matter if he was going to pound me into the pavement, but I just assumed because we were in Studio City, nobody was going to actually fight. And he goes, "What's the problem here?" And I just turned and raging. I said, "Your wife is the fucking problem. Your daughter is the fucking problem. She ran into my son. She hurt my," you know, and he was like, I'm sorry. I was so mad.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And then right after that, I saw one of the guys from Broken Lizard.
Oh, yeah?
The ginger guy from Broken Lizard.
Yeah.
And I said, "Hey, that's the ginger guy from Broken Lizard."
Now, just out of curiosity, is being a ginger, is that kind of like being like a motorcyclist? Like when you see other gingers, you kind of give a little like, "Hey, what's up?" kind of thing? Like, is that like a thing?
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay. That's
maybe.
Cool.
I mean, I think, well, not always. Sometimes you acknowledge it. Depends on the situation.
Do you just like, do a little hair tug, like,
hey. Well, there were a couple of ginger dudes at the winery I was at with you the other day, and they didn't acknowledge me at all. But they were working there. They seemed very busy.
They were. Yeah, that was a busy place. And they I mean, let's face it, they're kind of jackasses, so.
Everybody at that, what was the name of that place? The Malibu
Winery, which, if you go during the week, is beyond tolerable. It's actually very, can be very pleasant. We've had some great times there when we go during the week.
Yeah.
Now, this is the first time we had gone on a weekend, and it was hellish.
It was very crowded.
Yeah.
All the employees were miserable.
Mm-hmm. It was hot.
The band was just awful.
Oh, the band. We can get into the band, but the band was... just terrible.
They're just awful. It was just a group of what I assume were very wealthy Malibu locals who got together and played the winery for funsies.
You know what was interesting about that was the saxophonist was live, but because I couldn't see him, he was playing so poorly, I assumed it was a Casio. Like, I thought there was a keyboardist, like, doing a sax solo on his little Casio thing.
Yeah, no.
And then I saw it was an actual... And I don't know how... It's actually kind of impressive that he made such a crappy sound out of an actual instrument.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then the other thing about him was when I heard him, I assumed, oh, he's just another one of these dumb white guys that are up on stage. But he wasn't.
He wasn't. I mean, he played like one.
He played like one.
Yeah.
But he looked like...
He looked like it should have been much better than it was.
Yeah, he looked like the horn player from Dave Matthews, R.I.P., or the guy from the E Street Band.
Oh, if it's the guy from... It could very well could have been the guy from Dave Matthews.
Well, he's dead.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry.
Maybe I'm thinking of the fiddler. One of those guys who was sort of... Maybe it was Fiddles. It was the black guy in the Dave Matthews Band, but I think he died.
I think... Weren't they both black, the fiddle and the sax?
Maybe. I don't know.
I think so. I think they were.
I don't know. But one of them died. I think actually it was the fiddle player who died.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Sad.
Sort of. I mean, it's a fiddle player.
No.
I mean, yeah, you never want to lose a time. Anyway, the point being that was, well, yeah, that band was just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And not only were they terrible, but the guy who was doing, maybe nobody was doing their sound. I don't know. Because they had feedback every single song.
Yeah. And then a lot of times... whoever was controlling the board wasn't aware of who, because it was a large outfit.
Yeah, and they were just making it up as they were going.
Yeah, and it was all cover, you know, covers the top 40 songs.
Yeah.
But the guy who was running the board apparently wasn't given the, like, set list and then who would be singing each song.
Yeah.
Because the mics, the vocalist mics, were never on right at the get-go.
Yeah.
So you'd miss like half of the first verse before you started hearing the vocals.
Absolutely.
It was a mess.
Well, it was honestly kind of a blessing in disguise, because you got at least a half of a, you know,
yeah,
didn't hear him for a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that
in
is
some
true.
Ways, it was kind of a saving grace.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. The other thing that was interesting about that place was the dresses.
Yeah, you know what? All right, I will say this. There was a lot of attractive women.
There were a ton of attractive women, and a lot of them were in very little clothing.
Yes. Yeah, it was 97, 98 degrees.
It was really hot, but, I mean, they weren't they were wearing very tight dresses, small dresses, but they were put together. This wasn't
very well put together.
This wasn't, you know, wearing some shorts and a tank top
this
situation.
This wasn't beach stuff. This was... Like, they got dressed up.
They got dressed
summer nice.
Up. Yeah, exactly.
And amazingly, like, there was dudes there, but they all were kind of like tools.
Yeah, the guys are tools.
Yeah.
There was one table that was – there must have been maybe 14, 15 gorgeous women in tight clothes, a lot of cleavage, hair done up, made up.
Yep.
And then there were two guys in hipster, like, fedora hats and then white button down short sleeve shirts and khaki shorts. I was like, those guys must have a lot of money if they're sitting at the table with all those
ladies. Yeah, they probably do, right? Well, I guess that's then a tip for the listeners is if you're a single dude and you're like not a tool, go to Malibu Wine on the weekend and you got hot girls and
get friendly,
and they're all drinking wine, and the ratio is actually in your favor.
And despite the quality of the band, there were a lot of people dancing.
There were a lot of people dancing.
And like some of them were getting very fresh with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And you haven't, you know, you just buy wine there. I mean, it's not like you know, you can ply them with alcohol.
Yeah.
Because they're there to be plied with alcohol.
Yeah, they're there to be plied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not, saying, then go home and rape them. I'm just saying you can
well,
you ply them with alcohol.
I'm glad you said that.
To get the door open just to, be very much a gentleman with them.
To create consensual sex.
Exactly.
I'm glad you said that because given that you use this office to kill hookers, it's important.
Well,
you're not a
rapist.
You're
no,
a murderer.
I don't have sex with them.
It's just a murder thing.
It's just simply killing,
That's fine. That's not,
Speaking of so now I have a little...
Is it consensual murder or non-consensual?
Well, like I was saying earlier, they're kind of already dead inside, so really I call it consensual.
Sure.
They scream no, but their eyes say yes.
Okay. It's creepy.
We're going to get a knock on my door from the cops. So speaking, I want to talk about the fedoras.
Oh yeah, the fedoras.
Because I have a fedora, and I was wearing it yesterday.
Sure.
And so, was it like a tool? Is that a tool thing? Like to wear that?
No, I like fedoras. I'm just saying, like now that's a hipster stereotype.
They did take it.
Yeah,
but it is very common in like the wine tasting realm.
Sure, and it's important on a sunny day.
Yeah.
To wear a hat.
Particularly if you
protect your scalp from getting burned and skin cancer.
If you're in your 40s like we are and the hair is rapidly going.
Well, I had this whole conversation with my wife because, I have fedoras. But the other thing is I find that, I have a couple of golf caps, and then a couple of fedoras, but they don't really go with anything. They're not neutral color. Like, my fedora is blue, so I have to be wearing some kind of blue situation. And then the golf cap is like a light tan. Like, it would go with, only with a khaki outfit, and I hate wearing khakis. So I wound up buying a couple of nicer ball caps. Like, non-sports related, just, nice
neutral,
ball caps.
You can wear it with stuff, and you're not going to... Take it exercising or anything.
Right, and I look less like an old man trying to be a hipster.
I like my fedora. I had one. It was actually blue that I had, and we lived down by the beach, and I had saved it up on, I always put it on my little coin jar, mm-hmm. like by the window. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I hadn't worn it in a few months because, you know, it was winter and whatever.
Sure.
And then I went to put it on the next time, and it was like the mummy. It, like, just vaporized into blue dust. It had just been brutalized by the sea air and killed it. So,
well,
I got a new one down in New Orleans, and that one is much stronger.
It's a stronger.
And I'm not storing it there anymore.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you live right on the ocean. You got to.
I do.
Do you have to keep all your clothes and stuff in plastic so the you ocean, know, the salty air doesn't destroy it all?
I probably should, honestly. Yeah. It's well, we have a roof deck, and everything you put on that roof deck, the ocean immediately tries to destroy. Mm-hmm. It hates everything you make.
The ocean is our enemy.
It is.
As people.
It is.
As humans.
It is, and it eventually will probably kill us.
Well, and you live right next to it. It's like you're asking to be swallowed up.
Yeah, if a tsunami comes, I am solidly in a tsunami zone.
Yeah, you'll even on the roof deck, you're not. It's probably. Do you think a tsunami is going to get up to the roof?
I think a tsunami on the level of like Japan. I'm far enough away, and there's that lagoon, and there's an actual break because of the marina there. Mm-hmm. I might get away with being on the roof deck,
but. Like, do you think your building is solid enough to survive the weight of the water, like, structurally?
I think, like, a wave, it would be okay, like a tsunami, because it's not a big crashing wave. It's a swell
that
comes in. So it does have tremendous force, but I think it's built well enough for that, mm-hmm. to withstand that, probably. And also Balboa Creek's right there, so it has an outlet for it to go down
right,
as
right,
well.
Right.
I'm more concerned that, you know, it's also the building is built on a what amounts to a sandbar.
Uh-huh.
And then in terms of what they call like a land, any kind of earthquake, you're going to get into kind of liquefaction
of the sand. Of the ground beneath your building.
Right.
So your building will sink.
Exactly.
Is what you're concerned about.
Sink into the ground.
Sink into the ground, never to be seen again.
Probably never to be seen again. In that case, I'm hoping the roof deck is tall enough.
So you'll sink, and then that'll be ground level.
Well, I'm hoping my wife and I will kind of pull the Titanic. You know, we're up holding the railing as the thing comes sinking down, but we're going to be okay.
Right.
I mean,
are you going to be drunk like that chef?
I am, well, if I'm home, yeah, I'm probably drunk.
So you'll be just like the Titanic chef, but on a roof deck.
On a roof deck, yeah.
Okay, cool.
The other nice thing about where I live is right behind us is a wetlands, but also part of the wetlands is a gigantic underground natural gas storage.
Really?
Yeah, so we have a giant bomb next to a place that liquefies that's vulnerable to, you know, giant waves.
Oh, okay. Now, when you talk about tsunamis, mm-hmm. what about like a tidal wave or a rogue wave? Do you think that would be more problematic?
A tidal wave would probably be, but I don't know how, really, if there's ever been something like that, because the kind of wave that we think of, mm-hmm. it wouldn't really be able to work with a shoreline like we have, because we're in a bay, you know, we're in Santa Monica Bay, so it gets so shallow that I don't think you'd have like a crashing wave like you know kind of think of when you think of a tidal wave. Oh. I think it would really be like a big giant swell, but full of crap. I mean, it would be full of everything that it had crushed before. It'd be full of, you know, cars and debris and bodies and.
But what about a rogue wave? Because rogue waves, can't they come from inland? Because they're a rogue. They'll start on the other side of the country and they'll move across the country, and then get you from where you don't expect it because you'll be looking out at the ocean, but it'll be a rogue wave from the other side.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could get me if it crossed.
It's an Atlantic rogue.
If it went up like, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard and then kind of took a right and then another right, came down maybe, you know, Jefferson or something like that, that would surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could get you.
It could.
Yeah. You have to be careful of rogue waves. I don't know if you ever saw the remake of the Poseidon Adventure called Poseidon. But a rogue wave is responsible for the death of Fergie.
That was really their solution to that title, was to take adventure out of it? That was the decision?
And the. Let's take the out. And adventure. It's just the name of the ship. Yeah.
All right.
They did. And we'll put Kevin Dillon in it.
Nice. Yeah. Because that's what was missing.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And Kurt Russell's in it.
I have not seen that movie, no. I haven't seen the Poseidon Adventure in forever as well.
The Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, wait. I did see it with Kurt Russell and the whole thing. And he's like, they're trying to get out the turbine engine. And nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really big budgeted film that tanked.
Nice. Man. I like it.
Yeah. But it had Kevin Dillon.
Did have Kevin Dillon. It's true.
So, you know, you take the good with the bad, I guess.
I'm not sure where that ends, where that lands in the whole scheme of that.
I don't know either.
Nice. Well, I'm not worried about Rogue Waves so much.
Oh, okay.
Definitely more earthquakes, tsunamis. But honestly, it's just like I like living at the beach. And
are you worried about tornadoes?
Maybe on the East Coast, but not where I live.
Not where you live?
No.
But you don't know because of global warming that those things could pop up. Did you see The Day After Tomorrow? Tornadoes destroyed Los Angeles in that film.
They did, but well, it was kind of already destroyed, wasn't it? I mean,
there was
also
a lot of science in that movie. No, in the Day After Tomorrow? No, L.A. was fine, except then it got wrecked by tornadoes.
Tornadoes are what killed actually downtown L.A. and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've seen the movie, and I thought The Rock was stellar in it. I thought he was really...
That's San Andreas.
Oh. Well, then no.
No. San Andreas is just about an earthquake.
So, all right.
The Day After Tomorrow is global warming accelerates, and then weird weather happens. Like, tornadoes happen in L.A., And then
the big giant freeze happens.
Yeah, and then
okay.
Like the first half of that movie is like crazy.
I stand by it. I thought The Rock was fantastic in that movie.
But, okay, I'm not going to argue with you anymore.
Yeah, that's fine
about that.
It's fine. We'll just say that The Rock was in it.
There were no tornadoes, just for the record, in San Andreas. That was.
I thought they had like some kind of weird, like weather thing or some. It was all.
No, it was just the fall. It was called San Andreas because of the San Andreas Fault, and right. It was like about that extinction level event. I guess they call it.
Is it weird that I find that in San Andreas that the hardest thing to swallow was the helicopter rescue in the beginning? Like, the rest of it, I was like, maybe.
Maybe. Sure, yeah. For me, the thing that bothered me about that movie was The Rock is, he works for fire and rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But then when he finds out his daughter's up in San Francisco, he takes a helicopter that the Los Angelinos pay for with their tax money.
And
me being
a
resident of Los Angeles, and maybe that chopper could have saved some people who were paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But he flies it all the way up to San Francisco to save his daughter.
Yeah.
And I find that questionable.
That seems like a dereliction of your duty.
It seems like he should be in prison. Like, at the end of it, I get it. You save your family. I get that. I mean, I get the emotion of it.
Yeah.
But what you did... It was beyond the pale. I mean, that's one, you're fired. Two, I think jail time is...
Did they end with a helicopter? They didn't, right? Because the helicopter crashed and stuff. And they ended up at a boat, didn't they?
Yeah, they're like in a boat.
Yeah.
Well, they're in a building.
And a boat.
Like his daughter's in a building and they're in the boat.
Right.
And then the daughter starts
and they somehow...
screaming. And then they're like, oh, hey, there's our daughter. And they drive the boat into the building and get their daughter. And then they get out of the building.
Love to be the guy that wrote that line. Yeah, this will make sense. They drive the boat into the building.
Why not? Why not? It's a, you know, it's a disaster film.
It is. I feel like the crashing like Carnival Cruise Line ship was a wasted gag. Like he should have been on the top of that. That's where he should have been.
Yeah, and it should have been filled with diarrhea. Because it's a Carnival cruise ship.
That's true.
It should have, before the disaster even happened, they should have been dealing with a diarrhea problem.
It's already quarantined. It's already a death ship.
Yeah. And then they're like the janitor who's just, he's just sweeping up the last of the diarrhea. Because that's how you clean diarrhea. You sweep it. So he's just sweeping it into the dustpan and putting it into the garbage. And just as he does that, Rogue Wave
comes
caused by the earthquake. And he's like, oh, really? Really? And then the ship's upside down.
I feel
down.
Like it should be the reaction should be similar to the Caddyshack with the sharpening the cleats kind of thing. Just
like, or that same actor actually in the dinghy boat.
Oh, the double take.
Right, yeah. You do that double take, and then there's your movie.
That's classic.
That'll sell a movie.
That actually would. You know, they don't do that anymore, do they?
No.
They don't do that kind of great physical shit.
No, nobody does double takes. Sometimes people will sneak in like a really subtle double take, but it kind of goes under the radar. You have to really be looking for it.
I feel like it's like the sarcastic comment on some ridiculous situation, and then the other person does that slight look and nod like a, I guess.
Yeah.
That's like the new double take.
Yeah, it's like they look and then they realize what they heard, and then they look back and they're like, give a shrug. Yeah, it's like the cool, understated mumblecore double take. Yeah. And that's a bummer that double takes have devolved into that.
Yeah.
Because I was hoping, like you talk about that Caddyshack double take, that guy should have been a star. He should have been made an instant star.
Absolutely.
By Hollywood. And then he should have built on that double take. He should have started like a triple take, quadruple take, quintuple take.
I wonder what happened to that guy.
I don't know. I don't know what's up with that guy. I hope he's all right.
I hope he's all right too.
He's a good guy. I mean, he seemed like a good
guy. I hope he uses that double take in his life a lot.
I do too. I'm sure people like ask him to do it. You know,
I kind of want a T-shirt with that guy on it now.
That would be great. With the with the wide eye
double take
right before he has to jump off the boat.
Yep.
Because Rodney Dangerfield's going to run him over.
Yep.
Yeah, I would like that T-shirt too. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. Well, you're the one with the show. Maybe you can make it happen.
Make some sort of swag bag.
Yeah, merch. You can give it to your guests when they come by the. What's the name of this theater? The Luckman.
The Luckman Theater.
What's the history of the Luckman Theater? Who are? It's Harold and somebody else. Luckman.
Charles and Harriet Luckman.
Charles.
He was an architect.
Harriet. Harold. Whatever.
He was an architect, and he designed the theater, and he designed another big theater out in Thousand Oaks. And, yeah, they built it in 90, 91, right in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's relatively – I mean, it's getting older now. When I first started here, it was relatively new. Now it's – I'm taking it to old age. But it's good. It's like a modern feel. It's on the Cal State LA campus, and, I mean, it's a professional theater, but we're
– How often do you, like, spend your lunch break on, like, a lounge chair – out front in the theater and just watch, like have your sandwich and beverage and just watch the co-eds walk by? How often do you do that?
I don't do that. I sit in my dark, you know, hookerless room and and eat my lunch here.
Okay.
Mostly because, honestly, I could get fired.
For doing that?
For doing that. And I.
But all you're doing, essentially, is sitting outside and enjoying your lunch.
Yeah.
And if you put sunglasses on, I mean, nobody can really prove that you're ogling young people.
it's true. I guess, you know, if you really had the kind of urge to do that, you could probably pretty quickly get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be easier if you were a woman.
It would be easier if I was a woman. It's also, you know, we have these reflective windows. I mean, you could actually stand in the lobby and do that, and you'd be fine.
Well, but, why don't you do that?
I don't know. It's not really. Again, I don't want to get fired.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how people could fire you for standing in a lobby and just looking out a window. That
it's a college
like
campus. I don't know if you're familiar with the level of PC that's going on now.
You know, but, in college?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, people are. But all I'm saying is, like, if you're standing in the window and you're touching yourself or something, then you've crossed the line. But if you're just standing in the window and enjoying a sandwich.
All it takes is one co-ed to go to her teacher and say, I felt uncomfortable, and you are suddenly in front of a inquiry.
Oh, okay. So that's why you hide yourself. Because you assume that all college students will find you creepy. And
I'm a 44-year-old guy, so yes, all college kids will find me creepy, male or female. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No,
yeah,
I am creepy.
Do you think there are because you spend so much time in this tiny soundproof office, eating your lunches, doing the payroll in triplicate? That's how many times you have to do the payroll.
I do. Yeah.
Is it a weekly or bi?
No, it's a monthly.
It's a monthly.
But it takes me 8 hours. I have to do it all day long.
It's a straight 8 hour.
Straight hour day of payroll.
Cool.
No, not cool.
Do you? on that day, do you smoke cigarettes endlessly?
I don't smoke anymore. I don't like the payroll day because it involves math very much.
Yeah, it's weird how money involves math.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff you got to do to kind of get everything, all the rights to work out and to make it look good and be right. And it's people's money, so you can't mess around with it. You don't want to make sure they're getting paid what they earned.
Yeah, you don't want to fuck with people's money. No. That's probably your biggest responsibility. Money. That and when someone like, I don't know, an Al Jarreau or something plays the theater, you want to be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's and also safety is another big thing for me.
Well, you want to keep Al Jarreau safe.
We do.
I don't even know if he's alive.
I'm not sure.
I assume so.
But that would make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
I'm fine sitting in my little room doing my paperwork.
Doing your thing.
Yeah.
Who's the most famous person that you've loaded in a show for at this place?
A show
in the Luckman in the main, because there's a across the pavilion,
mm-hmm.
which you don't. How do you cross the pavilion without getting seen by co-eds who might?
Oh, you look down at the ground the entire time.
Do you like wear like put a blanket over you?
No,
or something?
No, just eyes downcast.
Just eyes down.
Yeah, slightly rolled shoulders. Shuffle, slump. You know.
Uh-huh.
And
just
then,
try to.
Then you look as non-threatening as possible.
Just be invisible.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So you run that theater over there. That's like an intimate. That's like a black box theater.
Yeah.
And this the main theater is a proscenium stage.
Yep.
Maybe you should explain to your listeners the difference between those two theaters. They may not be well versed.
Proscenium theater is what you think of when you think of theaters generally. It's like a big wide arch in the front, and that's why it's called. It's called the proscenium arch.
Uh-huh.
So, like, ours is 40 feet wide and 30 feet tall, and, you know, so it's a big arch. And then they do masking, typically is called classic Italian masking, which is, you know, your black legs along the sides and your black borders at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And in between each of those on the actual stage is where the overhead lights are. And then you have APs, which are anti-prosceniums, which are up above the audience, and that's where we shoot front light from.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's up in the ceiling?
It's up in the ceiling, yeah.
It's really high up.
It is. And then we have box booms, which are side lighting, again, off the audience.
Uh-huh.
So that's all front light, and then so it's kind of separated. There's the front light, and that's the audience area, and then there's the top light, and that's the proscenium playing area.
Mm-hmm.
And the arch kind of defines where that each one of those spaces begins and ends.
And then the black box, conversely.
The black box, it's just a black box. It's 60 foot by 60 foot.
And you can design a show any way you want. You can put the audience anywhere.
Yeah, we have it set up so we can do a proscenium setup, a faux proscenium setup, where we have the audience on just one wall and mm-hmm. we're doing it. Or we can do what they call a thrust, where they're on three walls. Or we can do an in the round, where they're on all four walls and the actors play in the middle.
Could you conceivably do something where the audience hangs from the ceiling?
You could.
Like you put like swings in.
You could.
And look down at the show.
Yeah, yeah, you could. I mean, you'd have fun with insurance on that.
To have people sign waivers,
it's just
obviously.
Rigging, though. All that is rigging. I mean, the thing about theater is, and after doing it so many years, and you know this too, is you can do anything
That's
if you're willing
true.
To pay for it and you have the time.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
There's really almost no... You know, saying no if someone's got cash and they've got, you know, they're like, well, we have as much time as we need to do this. So
I get it. Although, like, when it comes down to it, it's not worth all that trouble.
Oh, God, no. I mean, that's why people don't do it.
Yeah.
Because it's too expensive and it takes too much time.
So who's the most famous person who's been on the proscenium here at the Luckman?
Really famous, like performance famous, is Itzhak Perlman. Who is a violinist.
Never heard of
him. He is one of the greatest to play, and he played here. It was amazing. He was incredible.
He plays concertos?
Yeah, he plays. I mean, literally, he has a list, like a book. It looks like a dictionary of songs that he can play.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like, you know, I mean, it's not a DJ. You don't sit out in the audience and flip through it, but that's his list. He doesn't look at it. He doesn't use any music anymore. I mean, the guy just knows it by heart.
He knows it by heart, yeah.
And it's him and an accompanist on grand piano that he travels with.
Uh-huh.
And they just, yeah, they run through concertos. They run through...
Is that how he learned the violin, by ear, or was he classically trained?
I don't know how he what his training was.
So you had a famous violinist here, yep. And you didn't find out anything about his history.
No, but you know what I did find out is that he travels. Part of his tech rider, which is the requirements that they have coming in, is that we have a little electronic scooter in case he needs it.
Oh.
So I had that for a week in the theater, which was awesome.
So you were riding around.
I was riding around. If you don't need to use one of those things, they're fantastic.
And when you say scooter, you mean like one of those sit-down jobbies that the elderly folks use in like the supermarket?
Exactly, yeah.
So it was fun.
But fancier because it's like Perlman. So.
Yeah. How fast could it go?
You know, it probably got up to like 7 or 8 miles an hour, which when you're inside,
that's pretty fast. Yeah. It feels fast because you're indoors. Yeah. Did you ever use it outside? Did you ever
No. I mean, I took it out to the loading dock, but I didn't.
It'd probably be creepy for the co-eds.
Well, and also, that's for sure. I mean, though that you might actually pick one up with that, you know, because then you got some swag going on.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Even as a 44-year-old man?
Even as a 44-year-old man, you know, you put like maybe a little, you know, Jaguar symbol on the front of it.
Sure.
All of a sudden.
Maybe put some like fiery decals on the side.
Yeah.
Hot rod it up.
Exactly. Maybe a Wi-Fi hotspot in there. You're good.
That scooter. I'm into it. That sounds great.
No, it was fun. He was great. We've done Modest Yahoo, who is not, when we had him in, he was still pretty, he had just released a new song and that was really popular. So he was very popular. We've done Rodriguez, who was, you know, that guy from the Philippines that they did the Oscar-winning documentary on.
Oh, yeah.
We typically share the same artists as the Hollywood Bowl's kind of lower-end people and, you know, grand performances and things like that. So those are the kind of artists we do. We do, like, KCRW-style artists for the most part.
Uh-huh.
So they're not typically well-known in general, but they tend to have a very intense, hardcore fan base.
Did you ever have John Waters perform
We
here?
Did have John Waters perform here.
And how was that?
It was interesting. I mean, you knew it was going to be interesting. He was he was really smart. He was really funny. He was really easy. Like,
yeah.
I was worried he was going to come in because he kind of feel like he'd be a diva, right?
Sure.
He was really easy, really nice.
Actually, given his history, I'll bet he's not. Just because, I mean, his early movies were just really weird, gross out exploitation, shoestring budget movies.
He's become kind of like this, you know, this icon in a way.
Sure.
And he's getting older, and a lot of times when these icons get older, they get a lot more particular about stuff because they have sycophants around them all the time telling them how wonderful they are and how much they help them and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Now,
but he's from the South.
Right. That's true. Well, he's from.
Isn't he?
He lives from Baltimore. I know that.
Oh, that's right. He's from Baltimore.
Yeah.
That's kind of the South.
Yeah, it's the Mason-Dixon area.
Yeah. Because I met that Ben Folds the other week. And, you know, he was a big rock star in the 90s. And he still records all the time.
Yeah.
And tours all the time. And, you know, he's pretty famous. But he was, like, as down to earth. But I wonder if that's just, like, the Carolina in him.
I feel like, in my experience with artists is if they're on their way up or they're on their way down, they tend to be very nice.
Right.
The ones that are at the top are the ones that you usually have the problem with.
I see.
And it's usually not even them. It's the people around them.
Right.
You're not even dealing with them. You're dealing with the 15 people that think they know what they want.
It's like my wife is a school teacher, and when people ask her, oh, that must be hard. Are the kids a nightmare sometimes? And she's like, almost never. It's all the problem is always the parents. So it's not the star, it's the people, the satellites around them,
right.
Who, once you're on your way down again, they'll those people disappear because they can't get anything from you.
Right.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, I was blown away by, because people have to tell Ben Folds he's awesome all the time. And people even were on the show I was working on. You know, and I admitted to being a fan, you know, but that didn't bother him at all. But I mean, I think part of it was like we were working together.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's different if you're like a.
What was he on? What were you?
He's on a show called You're the Worst.
You're the Worst. All right.
Yeah, it's a guest star turn on one of the episodes, and I got to be there. It was very exciting.
Nice. Very nice.
But it was funny because, you know, I've been a Ben Folds fan for so long, and I've seen him in concert a bunch of times, and I was a little bit starstruck. I was like, holy crap, I'm standing here. And in between setups, he I can't remember how. Oh, yeah. I was just like, can I get a picture with you? He's like, yeah, sure. So I got a picture with him. It's a hilarious picture because he's like all cool and Ben Folds, and I look like a starstruck retard. I'm just like, yeah. But after we took that picture, we talked for 40 minutes just about shit.
Oh, that's cool.
Child rearing, mm-hmm. politics. He was just like, blah, 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 blah. You know, I was like, and like 20 minutes into the conversation, I was like, holy shit, I've been talking to Ben Folds for like 20 minutes. That's crazy. You know, in my head, I said that. I didn't say that out loud.
Yeah, that would be weird.
That would have been weird. Yeah. I kept it cool.
Nice.
Much cooler.
Except the picture.
Well, the picture, it's clear I'm starstruck. But I did a much better job with him than I did when I met that William Fichtner.
William Fichtner?
Yeah, you know William Fichtner.
I don't know William Fichtner.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure I know William Fichtner.
You know William Fichtner. You just don't think you know William Fichtner, but you do. He's a character actor, been around forever. He was in Armageddon. He's in like all these Bruckheimer movies. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff. He works all the time. But I was at him in a voiceover waiting room. And I was alone, and then he came in and sat across from me. And he was just friendly. He was like, hey, how's it going? I was like, hey, what's up? And he's like, I'm William. I was like, I'm Todd. And he's like, started just like making small talk. Yeah. And at a certain point, he was like, where are you from? And I was like, oh, I'm from Sherbourne, Massachusetts, small town outside of – like did a 20-minute monologue about my fucking hometown. And in my head, I was saying to myself, you need to stop talking to William Fichtner about fucking Sherbourne, Massachusetts because you're boring the shit out of what – and then he got saved because his meeting was up. And he's like, all right, nice to meet you. I was like, you too. And then I was alone again and I was like, I'm an asshole.
I was going to a birthday party of a working actress, and this is one of my wife's clients, and this is I'm a fan of the Friends, you know, the Friends,
the program,
you know, just because it reminds me of like, well, I liked it when it was on, and then now it's a little nostalgic because it's kind of like we were in New York in the 90s, and you know, it's kind of a little bit of a throwback. So I was at this party, and the Friends were there. And,
all of them?
No, it was Matthew Perry and Jennifer
Aniston.
Aniston. All right, so they were there. The birthday, whatever.
Arguably the best ones.
So, and this is when I was still smoking. No, I wasn't smoking. I had my cell phone. So I see Matthew Perry go outside.
Uh huh.
And I'm like, I'll go outside. You know,
sure.
Just check him out. You know, see. Yeah. So I walk outside. He's out there smoking a cigarette.
Uh huh.
So I actually had to make a phone call. So I went outside, made the phone call,
uh-huh.
And then Jennifer Aniston walks out, and they're sure. chatting, and I'm right next to them.
Sure.
And the phone call ends.
Uh huh.
But I don't want to leave.
No.
Because he's right there.
Yeah.
So I'm holding a phone up to my ear and
just pretending
to talk.
That's funny.
I was talking, but pretending there was someone there. So I did that for about 30 seconds, and I realized how insane that was. So I hang up the phone. Like, I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Okay, bye, person who's not
exactly,
there.
Exactly, right? Tiki. Put it in my pocket, and I stand there, and I'm like, okay. Then I'm like, so now I'm just standing here. Like, now,
yeah, now
I'm
you're just standing, which is
right,
way worse.
Right.
You should ask for a cigarette.
So I, except I quit smoking, so I.
Well, yeah, but then you gotta
so I'm like,
suck it up, so to speak.
Probably, yeah, right. So I'm like, you know, this is even more insane than having a fake conversation. It's just literally standing next to them for no reason. Not even – like not pretending to do anything. I'm literally just kind of like not looking at them but so obviously not looking at them that I might as well have just been staring at them.
Right.
So I'm like, fuck this. So I turn to go. I'm like, this is insane. I just kind of duck my head. I turn around and I literally almost knocked Jennifer Aniston on her ass because she walked at the same time I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. It was great.
That's great. I have a Matthew Perry sighting story too. It's very similar.
Okay.
Mine was, there was this place called the 40 Deuce, and it was a burlesque club, you know? Like,
yeah, I think I remember it, yeah.
It was, like, at the time, it was, like, a really hip thing to do. You go, the ladies had the pasties, and they had the actual, like, tiny band on stage, and the guy doing the announcements. And they'd,
a small band, not midgets, right?
Like, just a drum and guitar, I guess. Maybe there was a... I can't remember. But, you know, they did that old-timey burlesque kind of ba-ba-boom, ba-ba-ba-boom thing. And he was there. And then that was back when I smoked. So when we all stepped out for a smoke, he was out having a smoke. And then I'm pretty sure he went to his friend's SUV and did coke. But I'm not, I can't
say. The important thing is he's staying off the painkillers.
This is a long time ago. Although I remember it was kind of right after he was supposed to have gotten sober or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think you go to a friend's SUV during a break from a burlesque show just to sit in the SUV. That would be weird.
That would be weird.
But I don't know. Maybe they just had an important conversation they needed to have in private.
Yes, with a lot of head bobbing.
Yeah. Maybe they were giving each other pleasure. Maybe it wasn't cocaine.
That would be slightly less disturbing than glowing lines of coke, I think.
I don't know. Honestly,
probably healthier.
I don't know. I don't know what was happening. I really don't. I shouldn't judge. But he seemed like a pleasant fellow.
Yeah, I get the feeling. I just, kind of starstruck by him because like I said, it's a bit of nostalgia, and he was such a big star when we had first moved out there.
Yeah, yeah. It was like they were all
huge stars.
Making
$1 million
a week. Yeah,
they were making $1 million a week. So it was just kind of, it's more of a throwback. I mean, even at the time, this is a while ago, he was already, he had been out of Friends for a while. It wasn't a big deal, but it was a weird starstruck thing. Like I was just acting like a jackass because I didn't know what else to do.
I don't know. I think you have to forgive yourself being starstruck.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to happen,
Yeah, like, it's unavoidable, but it's weird. Like for me, it's weird. It's always a curveball who really gets me. Like,
yeah.
William Fichtner was a curveball.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan,
yeah.
But I figured, that's not going to freak me, but it totally freaked me out.
Mm.
And then I've met much more famous people, like Madonna, and I was like, I don't fucking care.
Well, you also deal in a different area because you end up working with some of these people, so...
Yeah.
You're not just like, hey, can I get an autograph? You actually have to interact and do your job.
Yeah, and that can be crazy. Like when I met Ted Danson, had to work with Ted Danson, I was like, holy shit, I'm standing and talking to Ted Danson, and they're paying me to do it. It's exciting.
Way back when I actually acted, and I had a brief 2-year period where I was doing commercials somewhat successfully, not at your level, but enough to make money.
Yeah.
I did a Sprint commercial, and this is back when they had the it was a guy with a...
Can you hear me now?
No, it was a guy...
Oh, no,
maybe it wasn't Sprint. Maybe it was Verizon. It was a guy with a long trench coat.
Oh, no, that was Sprint. I get him. Verizon is the Can You Hear Me Now guy, right?
Yes, because he's doing Sprint now.
I get it confused because he's doing Sprint.
Yeah. No, so it was Sprint, and it was the guy with the thing.
I remember the trench coat guy.
Yeah.
That was a weird...
And I was in the middle of a take with him, and he was a cool guy. He was fine.
Sure,
he wasn't
sure.
Really paying attention to anybody, but, who the hell cares? He did his job, and he was pleasant enough. But we were doing the take, and I'm sitting there across to this, we're in, a coffee house, and I'm sitting on a couch. I have a couple lines with the guy next to me, and then he sits down and starts talking to us.
Sure.
And I literally blew a take because he was talking, and I'm looking at him, and I somehow just got in the mindset of, I'm watching TV. Because it was him and his voice and his thing. And I was just like, yeah. And then there was this beat. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be talking to
him. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I had a callback for a Jack in the Box commercial ways back. And before we went in, the casting director took all the actors and gave them this speech, apparently, that she must have to do every time she casts one of these spots. But she said... So when you go in, the director is the guy who does the voice of Jack. So don't let that distract you. Okay? And everybody's like, uh-huh. And you could tell, most of the people in the room when he started talking were like, it was a concerted effort. Because it's so weird when the guy who does the voice of the ball head, the person who is the ball head
is
a different person.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does all the voices.
Yeah.
What a racket that guy has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has a production company, he's a director, and he does The voiceovers. So he creates all the ad campaigns, all the ads for Jack in the Box. And he's a gazillionaire just doing that. It's like a good bit. But I actually did wind up doing a radio spot with him. He's a really nice guy. Anyway, so it was. I remember that being like, oh, shit, that's so weird that that voice is coming out of that guy. Because that doesn't it's incongruous. Doesn't marry, it's like, whoa, that's really weird.
Yeah, that's got to be totally freaky.
Yeah, yeah. So I get why she had to say that to everybody before. But I was also like, I don't know how you can avoid the – you have to keep it together. That's you make a concerted effort to keep it together and not freak out.
That's – that would be weird. Being cast director must just suck. You got to deal with that all the time, like that kind of stuff. I did an audition for some movie, and it was like one line, and the line was literally screaming, like it was like, you know, get out of here or some crap like that.
Sure.
And the cast, I hear it, like I'm in the waiting room. I hear get out of here, and I'm like, get out of here. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm like, all right, whatever. And I go in, and the cast director goes, okay. We're in a small office. You don't have to yell. I was like, yeah, no, I got you. Okay. And so they feed me the line, and I just top of my line, get out of here. And I realized this poor – she's like just – you could see on her face just like, fuck. Because every single actor got that same line, and every single actor screamed like the 3 feet into the face of the casting director.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. But then I don't know. I think that's on the casting director.
Well,
because you should pick – don't pick that. If you got to pick according to your space or just like cut that line or cut
– That was my thing. Yeah. I was like – because I was like, yeah, no, absolutely. I won't yell this. But then as I'm doing it, I'm like, there's – really no way to do that and make it real. Like
I had an audition
stage whisper it.
Yeah. But. I had an audition for the American film classic Big Mama's House 2. And the whole scene that I was given was all slapstick. It was all slapstick comedy. A guy falling over and he, you know, running into shit. And like I walk into the room and I've kind of worked it all out, the blocking for myself. And I started and she said, I'm gonna stop you right there. Don't do any of the falling down stuff. And I was like, okay. So just sit here and say these lines. And it's not – I don't know how you're going to determine if you don't – ah, fuck. So then, and then I just left. And Leland Gant was outside, which I thought was interesting. You know that dude?
I know the name. I can't picture the face.
Did you ever see that movie, Seven?
Yes.
He's the guy who's freaking out because he was forced to fuck a lady to death strap-on.
He's also the guy in The Alien where he's like, get it out of me. What's inside me?
What's inside me? Yeah. He like made his living like freak out screaming for years, which was funny to me because I walked out. I was like, oh, shit, that's that guy who does freak out screaming. But he seemed really quiet.
Then he gets into the audition for, you know, Big Mama, and he's like, I can't fall. I can't fall. I can't fall. Exactly what we want.
That's what we wanted.
Absolute panic.
Oh, jeez. Good times.
How do you remember all these guys' names? God.
I'm just a wealth of completely useless movie-related
I got a lot of crap in my head, too, but I cannot retain. Like, I used to play the movie game with you and Steve Falk and Andy Kamenetsky and stuff like that, and I was like the retarded stepsister. Like
they retain even more. Those two guys retain way more than I do. It's ridiculous. Well, and then the worst thing was is I was on that podcast, Doug Loves Movies, with Doug Benson, where he does movie trivia games, and I couldn't fucking do it because I was like, I know this. I can't do it. I'm freaking out. I can't believe I'm on Doug Loves Movies. It was weird. And he plays the easiest games. It's just like the audience gives you a name of a movie star, and it's just people just go down the line naming movies that the person's in. And like I had one in my head, and then the person next to me said it, and I was like, oh, fuck. I was going to say that. And I was like, I know this person's in 40 other movies, but I can't think of a single one right now.
I'm like, talk to my wife, like, even stupid things like, you know, like, I don't know, like, where the apples are. She'll be like, so where are the apples? I'll be like, this is in my apartment, mind you. I'll be like, it's, so you go into the kitchen and you take a right, and you open the door of that thing that keeps things cold. And you, it's in the red things are in the drawer down there.
So you're truly from Massachusetts,
because
that's how you get road directions in Massachusetts.
Yeah, totally.
You don't get any street names or you get. So okay, so you see the elm tree at the end of this block, so you go there and you take a left, and then you're going to see a 7-Eleven. Past that 7-Eleven, then there'll be three more 7-Elevens. When you get to the fourth 7-Eleven, then you're going to go right. And you're never going to...
It's one of the few places where you can say, oh, it's just go a bit. And, like,
yeah,
that's actually some sort of distance that they know.
That's probably, like, Google Maps and Siri and all that is probably the greatest thing if you're living in Massachusetts. Because you, back in the day, you couldn't get any real direction.
No, it was every mark was either a Packy or a rotary.
Yeah. Packy. It's a Packy.
Gonna go past
That's
that
a liquor
pack.
Store for those of you not from Commonwealths. Oh man. Well, this has been a great show.
Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I had a really good time.
Yeah, me too. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, indeed.
All righty, sir.
All right, see you later.
Later.